You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Hour number two of the Roto Experts in the Morning is live here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Greg Sussman, Tony Cincotta, hanging out with each other today. No Corey Parson, no Scott Angle. Both those gentlemen are on vacation. Corey Parson will return tomorrow, while Scott Angle has a couple of days off this week. He'll be back on Thursday. Tony, will you be taking any vacations?
I don't think they allow me to have vacations. That's kind of crazy, right? I think that Corey Parson needs to give me his agent's phone number. Because for a guy that's not been here that long, he gets a lot of days off. I think I need his agent.
Probably. I just read this note, which I found pretty interesting, about the Atlanta Falcons, why they're home. Basically, they alternate every year between the AFC and NFC. So last year, the Broncos were home, for instance. But the home team gets one advantage, quote-unquote. They choose what color jersey they wear. They want to wear whites or reds. You know, it's up to them. Right, so Atlanta could choose what color jersey they wants to wear. However, all time, the team that has worn white is 32-18 in the Super Bowl and have won the 11 of their last 12 matchups.
Wow. So yeah. It's all about the color.
W-H-I-T-E, white team, victory.
It's interesting. Now we're going to have probably a protest and a march about the Super Bowl colors picking this weekend in the United States.
What did you... You know what? I'll save that for Out of Bounds, actually. The Green Bay Packers, the last team to win the game not wearing white. How about that? Against
really?
The Steelers.
You know, it's funny because when you think of the Green Bay Packers, their uniform might be the most... That sticks out to me. Like if someone says Green Bay Packers, I think of the green shirts, the the yellow helmets, the big G on the side. I never think about them in a white uniform.
No, I only think about them wearing green. Actually,
yeah,
absolutely.
Very detailed with the Green Bay and the Pittsburgh Steelers are actually the same way. You always think of them in their black and gold and all the Steelers. Man, I live in Jacksonville,
right?
I've never seen so many Steelers. Every time you go to a sports bar out here, it's all Steelers fans. It's amazing.
I don't picture them in white either.
No, I don't either. They're black and gold too. You signify them with their traditional colors there. With the New England Patriots, a lot of difference because you see a lot of white Tom Brady jerseys running around.
But it's interesting because I'm now thinking about it. Is there actually, because when I think of Patriots, I think of blue personally. But is there actually any team in the NFL that you think of them in white?
The only other team is actually the Buffalo Bills.
Really? Okay.
I don't know why. That's it. Because the Jets, the green.
Sure.
The Colts, the blue.
Right.
I don't know. The Bills, like, I guess they just don't jump out with the.
Oh, you know what?
A proud franchise.
Speaking of that, the Dolphins I think of in white, actually.
Them too.
The Lions I think of in white.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
See, I think of them in blue from all the home Thanksgiving games, I think.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I don't know. I think of them in white. I guess that's probably it. It's interesting.
I never realized. You know one thing I never realized? That Barack Obama has 4 million, four times the amount of Twitter followers than Donald Trump.
Wow, that could change now that Donald Trump is president.
Well, I would think, you know, Donald's been on Twitter so much and he actually says, you know, crazy things that he would have more than Barack. But Barack has 83 million and Donald Trump down at 21. Donald's not winning.
The Dallas Cowboys. That's another team I think of in white for sure.
I do too.
That's a good one.
I think it's because they've had so many historic games playing at home. You know, before they had the big stadium, you had the hole in the roof in Irving, Texas, and you used to think about the Dallas Cowboys playing in those games. And another team that always played on Thanksgiving, except for two seasons, they gave up that situation.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. That's
Did you know they gave it up on 2 years they didn't play on Thanksgiving?
No, I didn't know that.
The St. Louis Rams, the reason that the Thanksgiving games were started were to increase attendance in Detroit.
Right.
And Dallas jumped in as well. And then people were complaining because the Detroit and Dallas always get to play, and St. Louis was hurting attendance-wise. So they gave it up for 2 years to the St. Louis Rams, and then the Rams actually didn't sell out the game, so Dallas took it back.
That's really funny. I never knew that.
Yeah, it was. I think it was in the 70s. I was actually reading about it because it was a long time. And I remember people always saying, man, I wish my team played on Thanksgiving. And then they added that third game at night, which is not the same team each and every time, but Dallas and Detroit. The tradition was because of lack of sales and lack of getting people to the games that they started those Thanksgiving traditions.
That's a really good stat. That's a good stat, Tony. For more good stats, you can listen to Tony's and Kyle at DFS Today every single weekday morning. How about that?
Yeah, we try to do our best on those shows each and every day. Basketball now full front because now we got football all done with and baseball a couple months away. So it's all about basketball DFS unless, of course, you're a hockey guy.
There you go. Hey, let's talk to Matt in New Jersey here on the Roto Experts in the morning. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, man.
Hey, quick question for you. Do you think that the Patriots would be in the same position they are today had Jimmy Garoppolo started the entire season?
So it's funny you say this, Mark, because people like Colin Cowherd have tried to bring this up, right? They tried to get this thing started, this Jimmy Garoppolo thing, that Jimmy Garoppolo should be the starter in New England. And Tony, I find it to be completely and utter nonsense, but you're the Patriots fan, so I'll give it to you.
I think the coaching staff does such a great job, they would be competitive, but I don't see them going and winning the Super Bowl or having that opportunity with Jimmy Garoppolo. Everybody points to Matt Castle's 11-5 season and how poor Castle was after he left that. That was one season, and the one thing that we talk about all the time is small sample sizes. We're talking about a guy that played 16 games as opposed to 16 years of Tom Brady. I think it's hard to look at it.
Yeah, I think so.
He'll get traded, and we'll see a Brock Osweiler situation where he'll get paid big time because he's been kind of the protege of Tom Brady.
Yep, I think we will, and I don't think they'll give him away, so somebody's going to have to pony up to get him, and I'm not necessarily sure that people will. I think that T's afraid of it, but yes, I think exactly that. I've seen games where I thought he looked good, and there were other games where it was like, oh, man, he's just a young quarterback out there. I think it's going to be a tough time learning a new system for any young quarterback, especially a guy with minimal experience. So, yeah, he's going to get traded, and I think people will be disappointed.
So I don't know if he'll get traded this offseason. He's definitely going to get Brock Osweiler money somewhere because people and teams are so desperate for quarterbacks. And we saw him go, what? He was 2-0, right, as a starter? And then he didn't play the third game, and then didn't play the fourth game. So he was 2-0 as a starter. And Brock Osweiler played a similar amount of snaps. He made $75 million, or $37.5 guaranteed. So Garoppolo's going to get paid. I don't know if the Patriots... I don't know if someone's going to pony up what the Patriots want, because they're going to want like a second-round pick for him, right?
I think that like the numbers they're throwing around are ridiculous. Like I hear 1-4, which it will never happen. So I think you get a second-round pick. Remember, Sam Bradford had a long career in this league. Whether he liked it or not, he started games, and it took a first and a third to get him. So I don't see anyone giving a first-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah, I don't really see that. I don't see that either. That would surprise me. We talked a lot about quarterbacks and free agents, and like I said, I was with my friends yesterday, and most of them were Jet fans, and they're all talking about how excited they are at the prospect of Mike Glennon, and that just amazes me.
But that's the whole thing, is like everybody gets excited about the backup quarterback, right?
Right.
Every single time. And it doesn't matter who it is, he's going to be the hot name, and he's going to have an opportunity to come, and the Jets are like a franchise that absolutely would be there. And he looked good. People liked him coming out of college, but he hasn't played. And they went out and drafted a quarterback in the first round when they knew they already had this guy. So you have to believe, I would think, somewhat in the NFL resources in Tampa Bay that judged him not to be a starting quarterback.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, and Tony, it's kind of like there's two regimes there that kind of judge him not to be a starting quarterback.
Yeah, no, that's the whole thing. Like, it wasn't just one guy, and it's been a couple of years. It's been 5 years.
Yeah, it's been 5 years. This guy, I don't know if all these teams expecting this guy to be a savior. Like, that seems crazy to me.
It definitely seems crazy. And when you think about what the San Francisco 49ers will have to give up, right, to get Kirk Cousins, if that's the route they go, And yet they're willing to give all that up and not even consider a Mike Glennon.
Right.
Is all another indication.
Oh, totally with you. Totally with you. The going into the Super Bowl in 2 weeks, we talked about narratives. This whole show thus far has been built around narratives, false or true. But is people always look for storylines, right? The storylines of the game. What is your number one storyline going into the Super Bowl? Because I think it's very obvious.
I think it's Matt Ryan versus Tom Brady.
Really?
I think that's the biggest storyline on the day.
I don't think so.
I think Tom Brady comes ready to play, right? And Matt Ryan, as much as everybody's talked about the MVP, and I think it'll be announced before that game.
It will. It's the night before, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be announced. He'll have that in his realm, and then Tom Brady 7 times in the Super Bowl against this guy in his first time in the game. I think that's going to be the story.
Oh, I totally disagree. To me, the story of this game is going to be the narrative, the storyline, not the story of the game. The storyline going into the game is going to be the Patriots versus Roger Goodell. It's going to be the Patriots, all they want is for Roger Goodell to have to give a trophy to Tom Brady and to Robert Kraft, and that's all anyone's going to talk about. And somehow, the storyline will build that nobody cares about the Falcons, that Matt Ryan, under the radar, it's all about Brady, it's all about Goodell. Like yesterday, at Gillette, they started a Where is Roger chant. Where is Roger? Right? Like that happened yesterday. Well, that's the storyline.
The greatest, I don't understand how that whole thing works, right? They win the AFC Championship.
Yeah.
And they have Teddy Bruschi there to hand them the trophy.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
He's not a member of the league.
No.
He works for ESPN. Like, what,
he works
what
for
the
ESPN and he works for the Patriots, I'm assuming, in some form or fashion.
Right? So, how does that even work? Like, where did he come up? Like, there was no one there from the league to give him the AFC Championship.
I asked you. We talked about this last week. If Goodell, we said it was right. It made sense that Goodell would show up in Atlanta because there's no reason for him to be in New England. And you assumed that Troy Vincent, his like second in command or whatever, would be in New England. A former Patriot, the whole deal. He wasn't. Nobody from the league wanted to be in New England yesterday.
It was the craziest thing that I see Teddy Bruschi give the trophy to them.
Like, do you realize? You know, Tony, if the Steelers would have won that game, who would have presented the trophy, right?
No.
It would have been Joey Porter.
Joey Porter. I'll tell you, that was one of the craziest things. The other thing was Robert Kraft was so drunk.
He was wasted trying to get the crowd to chant with him.
Yeah, and Bill Belichick was shaking his head once and then realized, hold on, I'm on TV and that's the owner of the team.
You know that's exactly what Belichick's head.
It was crazy, right? The guy was hammered.
Hammered yesterday. We're gonna, and everyone's just silent. Win, silence. One, silence. More.
It was so crazy. It was so crazy to see.
So ridiculous.
Like the only other owner I could see doing that would have been Jerry Jones. I could have seen that with Jerry.
Jerry Jones would get so excited. He'd be so drunk. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I could see.
You could see Dan Snyder getting drunk.
No, I couldn't see any. Belichick, not Belichick. Kraft and Jerry Jones are the only one I could see pulling off that. But the other 31 owners had to be sitting there watching, and say, "This effing guy," right?
That's what I imagine like Mark Cuban doing right when they win the championship. That Mark Cuban was just—he was just so drunk.
It was so crazy to see that. And, you know, the Rooneys, you know, the big family thing, have been like, oh,
rolling,
God,
yeah, rolling
on.
For sure. I asked you last week about Donald Trump tweets during the Super Bowl. Given Donald Trump is a Patriots fan, right? Like Tom Brady voted for him and Belichick voted for him. Will Donald Trump be at the Super Bowl?
That's a great question, excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, does the president show up? I don't think he shows up. I think he's got other things to do. He's working on today. It's a big day for him. It's going to be his first day at work.
Yeah, because he had a weekend to celebrate.
Yeah, he has a top executives meeting at 9 a.m. this morning to talk about manufacturing in America.
Do you think we're talking about manufacturing or crowd sizes? What do you think?
I think the crowd size was at 8 a.m. That meeting wasn't announced to the public, but that happened this morning at 8 a.m.
All right, when we come back, we're gonna talk some hibernation stuff. Waking up for hibernation, talking baseball, and we're gonna do it in the form of this. I'm gonna give Tony a fact or an alternative fact, and he's gonna have to tell me which one's which. We talk alternative facts.
I like this.
Next, the Roto Experts. I just realized that the Super Bowl, Tony, will have a preview on this Sunday. Right, we have Super Bowls in 2 weeks. I realized the Super Bowl preview is next week, when the main event of the Royal Rumble is New England's John Cena versus Atlanta, Georgia's AJ Styles.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that. It's a star-studded Royal Rumble, so I'll be looking forward in the off week of the NFL that we're going to have the Royal Rumble. There's two things I thought about.
Yeah.
And one is, instead of like spending in 4 years from now, spending all this money on campaigns,
yeah,
why don't the Democrats just pay 80,000 Democrats to move to Ohio and it'll solve the whole problem?
Correct. Well, this election it wouldn't have, but like you could just move them all to like Florida, right? Like move them all to Florida.
Yeah.
But you don't think they could just pay? Like you don't think they could just pay people from like California to live in Florida for 6 months?
Right. Yeah, of course. It's so much cheaper, so much cost effective.
Yeah, I agree. I totally. It's a good point. Really good point.
Just move these people.
Yeah. So the top trending Twitter topic yesterday, when I was trying to put together a framework for the program, was alternative facts. Now you know this story, right, Tony?
Yes.
So
yes.
The story came from Kellyanne Conway, who is one of Donald Trump's advisors, yeah. President Trump's advisors. She was asked about Sean Spicer, the White House press secretary, yelling at the press corps on Friday in regards to the inauguration numbers, and basically said that the press was lying and fake media and all of the normal Trumpisms. And when the media responded that these are just facts, we don't have to tell you, Kellyanne Conway said, listen, the press secretary was giving alternative facts, which, as Chuck Todd said, those are just lies. But nevertheless, we're going to play fact or alternative fact, Tone, and you're going to help me out and wake us up and get us ready for a little baseball.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, my man. All right. Fact or alternative fact. Mike Trout should be the first pick in fantasy baseball drafts this year.
Fact. So here's the thing. When you draft in any draft, when you're in the first round or the first couple picks of any draft, it's all about probability, right?
Yep.
So basically, when you're in a baseball draft, I have to make my first selection, and then I have to write down a number like 33 home runs, 300 batting average, 110 RBIs, and 100 runs scored, and then I'm keeping track of those numbers add up in a roto-style format. And there's no more predictable guy in all of Major League Baseball than Mike Trout. So if you're doing anything else, you're overthinking it, or you're trying to be the smart guy at the water cooler and trying to impress people instead of just taking the easy route out, doing what you're supposed to do, and draft this guy.
Well, so let me kind of build from there. Now, you have said, and you've actually said this a couple times over the last couple of weeks, and I really haven't gotten a chance to go deep into it with you, but literally every time you draft a player, you tell me you write their stats down and project it, right? And not every person does that, right? They kind of like look at last year's stats and maybe look at some other people's projections, but you actually physically write down what you expect from every player, right?
Yeah, so basically, when you do months of research, right, which most people do when they go into the baseball draft, because most people, I think, will start the day after the Super Bowl. So even in that case, we're talking about 50, 60 days of research.
Right.
So I'll take 3-4 reliable sources. I'll probably average them out, and then I have a mental idea of what I expect from each player. And then you have to go into your leagues from last year. You go into last year and you find out, and I'm just going to give you a 15-team NFBC league.
Sure.
You want a 270 batting average.
Yep.
You want 1,100 RBIs. You want 1,100 runs scored. You want 300 home runs. You want 160 stolen bases. So every time you draft a player, you put those five categories down, and you got to get close to those statistics.
Yep.
Now, you can come up a couple short and a couple there. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to come in third place in every statistic. I think if you try for first place, you're basically going to be scratching your head. It's a fruitless exercise. It's all about balance. So you got to get the third place score in each and every category, and you'll win each and every league.
So I think that is just a picture-perfect representation of what we should do, right? Like, I have never been someone, I haven't even considered a strategy. Like, for me, I look at players, I try to find the best players on the board, and I admit, my favorite league is my home league, and we play head-to-head, so it is a little different. But
yep.
It's not totally different in that I want the most of everything, right? I want an aim. Like, I so often, I look at the best players, like, Mike Trout's the best player, and I'm going to take him number one overall. But I'm not necessarily building the best team. I'm just trying to put the best players in the best spots. I am not thinking necessarily of building per category. And I think that's what fantasy players really should do. They should project out everything. As Tony said, go back to last year's stats, every category, and even in head-to-head leagues, they offer you the ability to look at roto categories, and you go by the list. If this hot batting average is about 270, you need to aim to have that 270 batting average. You need to pick players that'll get you there. And the same go for all nine categories, or all 10, or however many you play. And that includes runs scored, which everyone forgets about. That includes that includes other specific categories for your particular league, because you want to try to just get to that number, whatever it is. And Tony's 100% right again. Not necessarily being first in every category, because that's almost, it's just too hard to predict and too hard to do that. But if you can come in third in every category, you're going to be fine.
And the one thing is, when you put these together, remember, wins, you're never going to get the number that you want. So you want to be close to that number, because when you play, most leagues are weekly, you're going to have two-star pitcher weeks where you can distort the values of that. So you just want to be close to that number as possible. Like, you don't want to be 20 behind. If you're 10 behind, you'll be able to make that up by two-star pitchers some weeks. And the same situation, I like to pick three closers, but I don't use three every week. There'll be some weeks where one of my closers have five games, and I won't use him, so I'll use an extra starter that week. And that's how you go about it there. So those two categories are hard to get the number. You just want to be close.
Fact or alternative fact, Jose Altuve should be picked in this top five.
I think this is an alternative fact. If you look at five statistical categories and what he hit for home runs last year,
yep,
I don't know if that's legitimate. Right? You don't know if that number's legitimate. And so I'm going to get the stolen bases, but every year a professional baseball player gets another year older, the stolen bases seem to go down. He's still a young player, but still, I think we've seen him at the maximum we're going to get from stolen bases. He's going to get 300 batting average. He's going to get runs scored, but his RBI opportunities are not going to be there batting second in the lineup that most players of elite level when you talk about a top five pick there. So basically, I'm worried about the home runs, and I'm a little worried about the RBIs. I would have him a little less than five, but he goes right around there.
Now, what's interesting to me is I have Altuve's stats up here. The stolen bases have gone down in three consecutive years, 56, yep. 38, 30 last year. The home runs have gone up to 7, 15, 24. RBIs have also gone up, 59, 66, 96. I mean, last year was just an absurd year, 24 home runs, 30 stolen bases, 96 ribbies, 216 hits. And it is a remarkable year last year for Jose Altuve. What makes you think that the home runs will go back down, Tone?
I just think I'm talking about a 5-6 player,
right?
That started out in seven home runs,
sure,
and now he's up to 24. Now I've seen videos. This guy's into the whole CrossFit thing, and he's a workout warrior. So I get it, but it's still scary. And I talk about predictability all the time. You know what? I'm just going to go with someone else that I can get power numbers and stolen base numbers. Like, if you believe in him, absolutely jump in on him. Because if you need to get all five categories with that first pick,
right?
The 96 RBIs they got from the two-hole last year are shocking to me.
Sure.
Like, I would probably put him at like 78 or 82 if it was me and I was writing down my numbers.
Yep.
So if you believe in what last year could happen again, absolutely go ahead and pick him. I'm just skeptical about the whole situation last year. I think everything went right. I don't think he hits that many home runs. I don't think he has that many RBIs scored. So I'm going backwards there, and I'm looking at his three-year history, and I'm looking at the physical stature of this player.
I understand that. I completely understand that, and I'm with you. So, but let me ask you this, right? So I think personally, it's a fact that Nolan Arenado should be a top five player this year. But he's not going to give you the stolen bases. We know that Altuve is going to give you 30. We know Arenado's not going to give you much of anything. But should he be taken over Altuve, though?
All right, so I could justify taking it here because I know I'm going to get four strong categories, right? I'm going to get strong in RBIs. I'm going to get strong in runs scored. I'm going to get a 300 batting average, and I'm going to get 40 home runs. So at the end of the time, I'm strong in those four categories. I think Jose Altuve has three strong categories. I think we got the batting average.
Right.
I think we get the runs scored.
Okay.
And I think in the stolen bases we got that, right?
Right, right.
We're going to have that.
Okay.
And the other two are questionable if you want to believe it or not. So I'm getting four strong categories, and I could make up those stolen bases in the other
elsewhere.
Draft. I know what I have from Arenado, and then I just go in. But the one thing is, when you pick a guy with no stolen base with your first pick, that's dictating what you're going to do the rest of the draft. So now you're not in a position where you can go and pick the best player.
Right.
You got to get into the category mindset, and you got to realize that somewhere down the line, you've got to pick based on the stolen base category.
It's a great point. But now, is that easier to find, Tony, than the power numbers, right? So if I draft Jose, if I decide, you know what, I want the stolen bases, I want the second baseman, I'm going to grab Jose Altuve in the top five. Now I have 30 stolen bases. I have a good average. I don't necessarily have the power. So obviously my strategy then changes, right? Like I'm looking for power later on. So what is that easier to find, though, than the stolen bases are?
There was more guys last year in the history of baseball that hit 20 home runs in the history of baseball than at any other time.
Okay.
So you could make a case that there's like a whole bunch of 20 home run guys, but there aren't a whole bunch of 20 stolen base guys. It was interesting last year. I was in the NFBC auction, and I got to a point where my power numbers were behind, and I had some stolen bases, which generally is not something that I do. And I remember being in a position where I was like, whatever Mark Trumbo goes for, I'm going to bid. Like, I was in a position where he's the only 30 home run guy left.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at drafts like that this year, and he's going to go about the ninth round, and you could be in that situation. When you get to a power point, it ends in the ninth round. And it got to the point in that auction where, you know, nobody knew it, but I was going to bid no matter what the price was because he was my last chance at 30 home runs. And I get more worried about the home run guys because stolen base guys come up on the waiver wire too. Like, you're never going to get a 30 home run guy off the waiver wire. Now, last year, the Minnesota Twins – jeez, I can't remember his name. The former Yankee that went over
Eduardo
to San Francisco.
Eduardo Nunez.
Got him off the waiver wire. 30-plus stolen bases last year. 300 batting average. You can find stolen base guys on the waiver wire occasionally, and they're easier to trade for if your league allows trading.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, I mean, Jonathan Villar was also off the waiver wire in some leagues as well.
Yes. Yeah.
But so
he's got Gene Segura early in the year too. You probably could have got.
Oh yeah,
in a
absolutely.
Trade, not a lot
for nothing. Absolutely, totally agree with that. So I then go back to the initial question because stolen bases are easier to find on the waiver wire, easier than power. So that makes me think, I should go power. But you said more guys at 20 home runs than ever before. You said that, right?
Yeah.
So then, shouldn't I get the steals and not worry about the home runs? Like, I'm not really sure which direction to go
So basically, if you're going to ask me what you should go with a balanced approach as much as you can, right? And then it doesn't dictate what you have to do the rest of the draft.
Right.
And you're not going to chase categories. And that's why a guy like Mookie Betts and Mike Trout
are 1-2.
The first two picks in the draft. Because we're going to get 30 home runs. We're going to get 18 stolen bases.
Right.
Like, the way I try to do it is if I can get 15 stolen bases from each one of my picks, I don't even have to worry about a stolen base guy. I'm going to be right there. So if I could just get a little something, that's why people are so infatuated with Paul Goldschmidt and Anthony Rizzo, because we're talking about first baseman and steal bases.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's so out of realm. And people actually, for the last few years, people way overdrafted Eric Hosmer because of the stolen bases from him. Yet they were, giving up the other categories, which they shouldn't have gave up just for a first baseman that stole, and they were picking them probably 3-4 rounds too early.
All right, there you go. When we come back, we continue playing Fact or Alternative Fact, and I asked Tony about pitching. Stick around. It's Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Tony, you and I have both agreed on this, that pitching is going earlier, and for good reason. Like, pitching should go earlier. They're half the categories are pitching. So we both like pitching. But how much do we both like it? So, fact or alternative fact, Clayton Kershaw should be a top five pick.
Fact. In fact, I would even consider taking him number one overall.
Wow.
If you don't take Mike Trout, I think the most logical is Clayton Kershaw. Now, here's the part that realistically I have a hard time comprehending. Pitching makes up 50%
yes.
of your points.
Yes.
But a starting pitcher can only contribute to four categories. They can't
yes.
be part of the saves. So a hitter can contribute to five categories.
Right.
So I look at it like that and I get a little worried. But a pitch is more valuable than an offensive player because there are nine pitchers and there are 14 hitters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a little bit of offset there as well.
So that makes me think, and I'm just using what you were just saying a few moments ago about, you know, projecting out, right, for categories.
Yeah.
If we project out that Mike Trout is a five-category player, right, and we project right. out that Mookie Betts is a five-category player, right, and then you get to Chris Bryant and Nolan Arenado and Jose Altuve, and we're projecting out at most really four strong categories. That is when you get to the pitching where you can get four strong categories. In standard leagues where you play nine categories and you have a rotisserie league, 15 teams or 12 teams, whatever it is, that is probably where I would consider Kershaw at three after Betts and Trout.
Yeah, and I think legitimately he's going number six in most of the high-stakes drafts I've seen.
Okay.
And I have a hard time with that third pick that I could definitely see me going with Clayton Kershaw, and I would take Trout and Betts one and two. Now, here's the pitching thing to me is I think there's a ton of good pitching. We talked about this during the show. People don't realize what baseball has done is that home runs were up last year, but you look at it, if you go back to your fantasy leagues 10 years ago, if any of you have the ability to do it, you're going to find half the league have ERAs over four. Now nobody does. And it's really a big change in the philosophy. So people come to the conclusion you can wait on pitching. There's plenty of good pitching. And you're 100% right. There's plenty of good pitching, but there's not plenty of elite pitching. And we have some really elite pitchers in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
And if you don't have one of them,
you
don't have any chance.
Yep, you're at such a disadvantage.
And if you don't have two of them, that's the one thing I go back and I look at every year. I'll go back and I'll review the teams that won in my league. And what I'm constantly finding for the last three seasons is every team that wins has two elite starting pitchers.
I totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. And a lot of it, some of it's luck, right? Like, I draft two elite, quote unquote, starting pitchers every year and they got injured, right? Like, that just sucks. But
yep.
The key is getting them and having them stay healthy. Okay. So if we agree that Clayton Kershaw is in consideration at, you say number one, I say number three, we both agree top five,
yep.
And if we say that, then you get to the next one, which in my opinion is undoubtedly Max Scherzer. So, fact or alternative fact, Max Scherzer should be the first Washington National off the board.
This is a great question. This is Mike Florio. Let's put this one on Twitter.
Okay.
Because I think this is a great question. Yes, I agree with that fact. And when I look at it, if you're talking about, we just discussed the whole elite situation, and you talk about Bryce Harper, you know what? Even if Bryce Harper gets back to where we thought he was, and last year was a huge down season, but the guy's got all the tools, he's got all the talent in the world, there are four or five guys that'll put up Bryce Harper elite numbers in Major League Baseball.
Yep.
There ain't four or five pitchers putting up Max Scherzer's number. So, yeah, I absolutely agree with that. I think it's a great question. I think it would be 50-50 on that. But I agree. I think Max Scherzer is the number one pick of the Nationals.
Well, you're saying 50-50, right? And then you get to Trey Turner.
Yeah.
Like, we didn't even talk about Trey Turner in that. It was like Bryce Harper, who was in the conversation for number one overall pick last year. Max Scherzer, who is in conversation to be the number one overall pitcher, although Clayton Kershaw should probably beat if he's healthy. And then you get the Trey Turner, who you actually had a poll question about last week. Like, how high is too high for Trey Turner? And you said, you know, would you take him before number eight, I think was your question. And and Trey Turner is somebody that does steal bases, that should have a little bit of power, that's going to play a premium position, right? He'll be shortstop eligible before you know it. Should Trey Turner, if you think Max Scherzer should be the first national, that's fine. I think there could be an argument that can be made that Trey Turner should be drafted before Bryce Harper.
You know what? When we talked about this, I totally forgot about Trey Turner. I think he will be drafted ahead of him. I really think that this is going to be the hottest name. It's so crazy. People pay so much attention now to minor league baseball and dynasty leagues. It's become a huge, huge fad. And those people that play in these leagues are so passionate that they overdraft young players because they've been waiting for these guys to come up for like 4 or 5 years. Like, as soon as they get drafted, like, they keep talking about them. And,
yep.
And I think this guy's going to be overdrafted. I look at it last year, 324 at-bats, he had 13 home runs. So if you split it out, he's talking about 20 home runs. The problem is, at AAA in 2015, he hit 8 home runs combined. Yep. And you're like, how do you go from 8 to 13 and a half a season? The body size is there. It's
yes.
A big dude. It's a bigger kid, so he should hit for some power. He's not a young player. He's 23 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like a real young player.
We're not
so
like 19 or whatever.
He could hit 20 home runs this year, but you probably pencil in around 15, I think. Even though he hit 13 in that short time, just based on those minor league numbers, you got to wait. Last year, he didn't walk either. He only walked 4% of the time, which should lead to Yeah, that should lead to more strikeouts because it's Major League Baseball. If you're going to swing at everything, you're going to strike out. The 342 batting average, of course, put that down to 300. And a lot of people point out the batted balls in play. It's high, but it's always going to be high because he's so fast. I think there's a good chance that Trey Turner, actually, if you put Turner, Scherzer, and Hopper, I'm betting in the average drafts, Turner goes before those three.
Do you agree?
I would take Scherzer before. Okay. No, I would take Scherzer before both of them.
If you take Scherzer before, how would you rank him? If you're taking Scherzer one, how would you rank Turner and Harper?
I would go Scherzer, Turner, because I like the second base eligibility and then the shortstop eligibility.
Yep.
Like, I really think I would be scared to death to do this.
Okay.
But I think it can work. If you start your draft Trey Turner, Corey Seager, and you take care of second base, shortstop, that's a great start, and I think you could have a great team.
You could have a great team because those are, to me, those are guys that could fill categories out pretty easily, right?
Yeah. You could get both. You'll need a big home run guy a little later in the draft, like a Mark Trumbo would be someone you'd be attracted to a little later in the draft because you're going to come up a little light on the home runs. But the upside for both players are there that you might not come up light on the home runs. But if you start at those guys at middle infield positions, the one thing I will tell you that you'll learn when you start doing your research is that second base is not as shallow as it used to be.
And you will, again, understand that when you do your research and you listen to us, as of course, yeah, we will get into position by position. But as you're talking about, though, starting Turner and Seager that way, you kind of are playing the position, you know, the position volatility game a little bit, where you're filling in these quote unquote tougher positions and not worrying about anything else.
No, that's it. So you got those out of the way, then you have a tough decision. In the third round, do I go and stay with this, build up the offense, and maybe get a power guy here, or do I jump in the pitching? Because now I'm in the third round. Second round is usually a pitcher run these days. So now,
right,
do I pick the eighth or ninth best pitcher, or do I pick a guy that can hit 30 home runs? That's the decision you'll have to make in the third round if you start out with those two.
Crazy statistic. You talk about how Trey Turner's not young, and he's not, right? He's 23 now. He'll be 24 at some point next year, or this year, I should say. Same age as Bryce Harper.
I know. People don't realize when some of these guys come in the league and how young they are. And it's crazy, like, when people give up on certain players because they don't get it at 21, 22. I remember Nelson Cruz was the perfect example of a guy that failed so many times when he was younger. And I'm like, he's 23. Give him a break. We'll see this guy. Miguel Sano is another guy people have already given up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, and you can get that guy right there. And when I talk about 30 home run guys, he's one of them that people will give up on that you can get a little later in your draft if you need home runs. Just make sure that your batting average, you know, is decent before that because he'll be a little drain on your batting average. But he'll get you 30 home runs, and he'll get you probably 100 RBIs in that Twins batting order. I really like those guys there that you can catch up with some of these guys if you go and you get a second base and shortstop to start things off.
When we come back, we will talk more fact or alternative fact. We have a couple of good ones for you, including about veterans and younger players, and as well as two young shortstop. And we'll see what Tony likes more. Stick around. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're hanging out. I'm learning a little bit of baseball here. Strategy-wise, player-wise, nothing too crazy. And we're sticking top 10, top 20 guys here as we wake up from hibernation and get ready. Get you ready for the draft. Get me ready for the draft. Get us all back in the baseball mindset. Still a ton of free agents out there to be signed. Some major ones, of course, recently Mark Trumbo back with Baltimore. Jose Bautista back with Toronto. Two of the bigger names that were left on the market there. Now, here we go. So, for the first baseman, you mentioned Paul Goldschmidt, Anthony Rizzo just a moment ago, Tony, and you compared them and how interesting they were. Now, Paul Goldschmidt batted under 300 last year, barely, 297. Home runs went down 9, but the stolen bases are now up to 32. New manager, new regime in Arizona. Over under 25 stolen bases for Paul Goldschmidt in 2017.
I think you have to go under. You look at that, right, and you say exactly what you said. The unknown, right? So you got to be conservative when you're putting your team together. And when you see a guy change managers, all they have to do is a guy that, you know, takes less risk. We got a number 4 hitter in Major League Baseball or a number 3 hitter that steals 32 bases. There isn't anyone else that's like that in all of baseball. So to think that a first baseman is going to do it with a new coach coming in, there's a good probability that that won't happen. So I think you got to be conservative when you put it together. Plus, we're talking about a guy that's now 29. It's not old by any stretch of the imagination, but still there. We're talking about a guy that had 705 at-bats last year. That's one of the most, the highest in the league.
Right.
I think you're going to get some more power numbers from him. That's a good offensive ballpark. I was shocked that he only had 24 home runs. I think a lot of it had to do with how poor the rest of the batting order was, and he just didn't get an opportunity to see some great pitchers, and thus he got on base with a good batting average. He had a 15% walk rate. And I think that will continue, and he'll have the opportunities there, but you can't pencil in. I think you got to put him in for 20 stolen bases and be happy with that.
And then you get to a guy like Anthony Rizzo, who for 3 consecutive years has had at least 31 home runs. He's had 100 RBIs back-to-back years as his team has gotten better. He has scored run-wise about 90 runs each of the last 3 years. The consistency since the Cubs have gotten a little better and since he's gotten a little better have much improved. Anthony Rizzo, should he go before or after Paul Goldschmidt?
I would take Goldschmidt first because of the stolen base opportunities.
Okay.
But I wouldn't kill anyone that went Anthony Rizzo. You're looking at one of the top offenses in the league. So I think 100 RBIs and 100 runs scored is definitely in play. I mean, last year was 94 and 109. I think you can get that. There's only a handful of players that you could say that had a legitimate shot of that. The batting average last year rose 13 points, and I think he could be repeatable. I don't think it was anything out there. I mean, only striking out 16% of the time. You don't see guys hitting 30 home runs that strike out 16% of the time. So he's always going to have one of the better batting average for guys that hit home runs. I think they're relatively close, but because of that one category, I would put Goldschmidt over Rizzo. But I don't have any problem with anyone that goes and takes Rizzo instead. I think it's not a bad play, and I think it's debatable.
Okay, so there you go. Anthony Rizzo, Paul Goldschmidt, closer and closer here each and every year. As we continue down some of the top projected players here, I want to get to the shortstop position in the top 20, and two young shortstops, two guys that I believe both were Rookie of the Years, and that's Carlos Correa and Corey Seager. We mentioned Corey Seager just a second ago, and Tony said, listen, if you start your draft, Trey Turner, Corey Seager, you're off to a good start. But I'm interested to hear why, Tony, you said a guy like Corey Seager rather than Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa last year batted 274. I know he's disappointed. He was a first-round pick in many places. Batted 274. He had 20 home runs the second consecutive year. Had close to 100 ribbies. Only had 13 stolen bases. I know we all thought that number would significantly go up last year. For Corey Seager, he batted 300, had 26 home runs and 72 ribbies. To me, these are very similar players. the difference is probably those 10 stolen bases more that Correa had. Which one would you rather have this year, Corey Seager or Carlos Correa?
See, I think Corey Seager, to me, is going to be the guy that is going to get me more power, and I think actually has a better year than last year. If you look at the one statistic that I look at last year, is that he only walked 7.9% of the time, which is a low number. His first year in the Dodgers, small sample size, he walked 12% of the time. He'd have a better batting average than the 308, which he put up last year, if he would take some pitches, he would walk some. And then if he had a better pitch selection, I think he'd hit some more home runs. I think this is a 30-home run guy playing a middle infield position.
Yep.
I think Correa is a guy that's going to provide you 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases, a decent batting average. I just think the 10 more home runs at that position, I'm going to take a shot on, because I think he can really do it. And that's crazy, because I should just be happy with the 26.
Absolutely.
But I think he can hit 30 home runs in that lineup in Dodger Stadium.
Absolutely. And I think it's very close. I think the one thing that just edges Correa out is the stolen base potential. We know Corey Seager's not going to run. And Carlos Correa will have, you know, he had 14 first year, 13 last year. We think that could go up a little bit, right? You're not even asking. I don't even know if he gets to 30. That can go up to 20. You're going to get a 2020 guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. Korea could provide you an opportunity where I don't understand. See, this is the thing that we get now with young players, right?
Yep.
And people look at this guy as a disappointment. I don't know how you could go and make that conclusion that this guy's a disappointment. Something had to be wrong with what you were thinking. 20 home runs and 13 stolen bases. His rookie season in 432 at-bats is 22-14. So let me point this out to all the Gary Sanchez lovers out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because Sanchez put up such big numbers in a small sample size, people like automatically double those numbers. He can't do that, and Correa is the perfect situation. So basically had the same numbers as he did the year before. But the reason why people look at it as a disappointment is because the numbers were done in 432 at-bats as opposed to 660.
Sure.
And it just, over baseball's 162 game season, every year the numbers seem to get there. Guys have slow Aprils, slow Mays, but at the end of the season you end up with the same numbers. Career is a guy, if he drops in the second round, you're going to get a huge steal there.
100%. And I think you're in a great spot. And right now, according to the NFBC, Carlos Correa is going number 17. He's going in the second round. Corey Seager's going in the second round. So I find it very, very interesting where these guys are going. And then I look a little above them in the NFBC, and I find two guys that, to me, couldn't be less similar in Miguel Cabrera and Charlie Blackman, right? One's an older first baseman with the Detroit Tigers. Another one, Charlie Blackman, is a, I don't want to say young, but he's an outfielder, of course, for the Rockies. They both do different things. Now, Charlie Blackman was a guy that people expected, you know, a lot from last year, certainly in the stolen base category, because in 2015, dude hit 17 home runs and 43 stolen bases. Last year, 29 home runs in Colorado with just 17 stolen bases. Then you get to Miguel Cabrera, the old reliable, theoretically, Miguel Cabrera. And last year, in what people thought was going to be a down year because he was going to get hurt, dude played in 158 games last year, had 38 homers, back over 100 RBIs, over 300 again. He's the same guy every year, seemingly. Which one of these guys would you rather have? Because it's so close for me between Miguel Cabrera and Charlie Blackman.
So here's the thing, is that when you guys, this is the thing about picking the best player, right?
Yep.
So if you picked Charlie Blackman, and you wrote down 40, like you penciled him in for 40
stolen bases. Yeah,
you came up 23 short. Like, where the hell are you making that up? But you first of all shouldn't have penciled in for 43, because if you look at it, his prior high was 28. So you should have been conservative and should have been right around there. And then you knew you had the upside of 40 something. I got Charlie Blackman in my auction, and it hurt me. And thank God that I was able to get stolen base off the waiver wire here, because this is a perfect example of how picking the best player doesn't always work. You look at that 29 home runs, and he only hit, you know, 19 one year before and 17. Most people would be saying, oh, yeah, I got 10 more home runs. Well, you know what, though? You wanted to compete in the stolen base category, and you were counting for 23 more stolen bases. Where the hell do you make that up? And that's why the categories are so important. Blackman's had a problem with his foot for 2 years now. All of last year, the foot is the reason he didn't get the stolen bases. Now, I'm going to go with Charlie Blackman over Miguel Cabrera. I think what gets lost here is that people don't realize position scarcity. When we come back from break, let's talk about position scarcity, because I think people get it wrong. And Charlie Blackmon is actually in the position of position scarcity.
We explain that concept, and it's not just second baseman and shortstops anymore. It's outfielders, too. We'll do it next here, the Roto Experts.